right, Delina Art, thank you so much for the morning show theme song on this 23rd day of October. It's a Friday. The free-for-all, of course, is on Friday, so you can call any time, really. You can always call at any time. I mean, I'm pretty easy going. If I started getting a gazillion calls, eight people calling at once, then I'd become more picky. But right now, I'm not so picky. 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254 on this free-for-all. And since it's Friday, you know, any topic that's been big over the week, if you want to discuss the Benghazi hearings, they were yesterday, pretty much all day. I've been really focused on them. That's not really a big deal for me. I mean, just for whatever reason, I haven't really – it just seems so obvious what's going on. You had a bunch of crooks in the Republican Congressional Caucus, and they're doing everything possible to try to bash and smash Hillary Clinton and keep her from becoming the next president, no matter how dishonestly they have to do it, no matter how much they have to rile up their base with just a totally false narrative. But all that said, you know, I'm not a fan of Clinton's. I don't want her to be president. I want her to lose. I don't think she's best for our country. I think she has a pretty similar economic agenda. Not exactly the same. She's not as bad, but it's somewhat similar to many of the conservatives. So I can't say I'm, you know, I don't, my horse in that race is I want everyone to lose. It's hard for me to really get that worked up. It's clearly bogus. It's clearly trumped up. It's clearly nonsense. I mean, they've been doing this for 3 years, and they found nothing. And they keep doing it. I guess, to some extent, this latest round of hearings has been driven by the revelation that Clinton violated federal rules when she failed to preserve her emails contemporaneously at the State Department. Her business emails were not preserved on the record-keeping system at the federal government agency where she worked, where she was the department head. And she alone has to be responsible for that. Nobody else. She was the department head. She didn't have a boss who said, don't worry about it. You can keep your emails private. You can keep your emails at your house. Don't worry about any of that. I'll be – no, she was the department head. And the rule was very clear. It was abundantly clear, the rule that was passed within the first 6 months of her assuming the office of Secretary of State. Long before the Benghazi disaster, long before the Libya disaster, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the evolution of my thinking on Libya. And I thank Douglas for opening my eyes. Douglas opened my eyes a couple of times. He opened my eyes on Libya. I've changed my view on the intervention, on the bombing there. Not 100%. I'm not quite where Douglas is, but I'm a lot closer to where he is than I ever have been. And he's also caused me to really look closely at the polling to see whether my fear that Bernie is basically done, stick a fork in him, give the nomination right now to Hillary, that was my attitude yesterday, and it's been my attitude really since at least the debate, or at least since the polls came out showing Hillary got a pretty good bump out of him, out of the Democratic debate, that view was a little premature. Now, I'm coming back a little bit. The end of the show yesterday, I said, hey, look, Obama did it, so why can't Sanders? I'm not quite as sanguine now. There were some clear differences between Obama 8 years ago and Sanders today. But, you know, hey, Obama did do it. He did come back from a pretty comparable deficit to what Sanders is suffering from now. So it's certainly possible. But I don't think it's – I'll be honest with you, I don't think it's that likely. I think it's a little less likely than I indicated yesterday. We'll get to those evolutions in my thinking a little bit later in the show, but let me just stick with just a moment more about the Benghazi hearing. Apparently, this latest round, after there had been a number of reports, I can't remember all the different House Republicans who picked up the cudgel trying to bludgeon the Obama administration, trying to beat Hillary Clinton with Benghazi. Yes, it was a terrible thing that happened for a U.S. embassy employees, including the ambassador, Chris Stevens, were killed. There was a mob, and apparently there were also in that mob Al-Qaeda sympathizers or actual agents, and they killed Americans. And this was in Benghazi in 2012, a year after the American-led forces, the coalition there, deposed Gaddafi. So, you know, the Secretary of State, the State Department was involved in that regime change, and the ambassador who worked for the State Department was ultimately a victim. And it is a very unfortunate, very tragic event, series of events. The Washington Post blames Obama. In today's editorial, the Washington Post says the real problem is that Obama didn't commit enough troops to occupy Libya. You know, that worked so well in Iraq, was so successful in Vietnam for us to take control over an entire country, that why the heck didn't we also do that in Libya? That's apparently their position. We should have had forces, troops on the ground everywhere, I guess, to keep down the violence. I have a different view. I think the problem is that we shouldn't have deposed Gaddafi. I think that was the big mistake that led to the unrest, led to the violence, led to the turmoil, led to, again, a vacuum, chaos, anarchy on the ground in which these terrorist organizations like Al-Qaeda were able to operate freely enough and be part of a protest, a mass protest, and kill, you know, the ambassador. So the real problem wasn't, as the Post implies or suggests, that we weren't involved enough, that we didn't have enough troops on the ground. The real problem was that we were there at all, at least with our, in terms of having unseated, deposed, killed Gaddafi. All right, if you want to join me, 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254. None of that goes to specific decisions that Clinton made at the time of the, you know, unfolding events in real time. None of that goes to that. There were no orders for the military to stand down, as the Republicans have claimed. There were no conspiracies where a meeting of high-level State Department officials gathered together to spin the American public. There was no hiding data. It's all nonsense, and nothing has been. In fact, the conclusions, not just that they were inconclusive, not just that the previous findings were, well, we don't know, we couldn't find, no. The previous conclusions were that Hillary Clinton and the State Department did nothing wrong. But they just can't let that go. They just have to keep going on and on and on. Basically, stop throwing red meat to their base. And as the Washington strike that, as the New York Times points out, I believe it was the New York Times, none of this really matters. Because their continuing failure, the Republicans' continuing failure to find anything wrong in the way Hillary Rodham Clinton and the State Department handled the events as they unfolded in 2012 in Benghazi, their utter inability to find anything wrong. In fact, their conclusion, just the opposite, that she did nothing wrong, will change nothing when it comes to their Fox-watching, Limbaugh-listening base. The truth is not of moment to these people. In fact, the truth is something that they recoil against, they rebel, they hate, they oppose. So, you know, just keep on telling your base there's something there. We found something. There's a smoking gun somewhere. That's the way you win elections if you live in a Republican district. You can't have a democracy that way. When the truth is the first casualty, you cannot have a democracy. We'll be back, 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254. It's mine.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. With the Fiat Chrysler contract ratified by the 40,000 UAW workers there, the union can now turn its attention to securing new contracts at Ford and GM. 77% of Fiat Chrysler UAW production workers approved the agreement, 72% of skilled trades, and 87% of the salaried bargaining unit. UAW President Dennis Williams says these votes are a, quote, testament to the UAW's democratic values and commitment to our members, end quote. Kentucky AFL-CIO President Bill Londrigan is looking forward to a federal judge's ruling on whether Hardin County, Kentucky's anti-union ordinance is illegal or not. The AFL-CIO and several unions sued Hardin County because they say the county anti-union ordinance violates the National Labor Relations Act. Londrigan says a Koch brothers-funded anti-union campaign tried to get counties across Kentucky to pass so-called right-to-work ordinances. Just 11 counties went for it. They outlaw agreements with employers to deduct union dues or collective bargaining fees from paychecks in workplaces where worker majorities decided to form unions. Advocates of these anti-union laws claim they stop unions from forcing workers to join unions, but that's a lie. Workers are not forced to join unions, since that's already illegal.
It's incredible how they have spun this whole Orwellian phraseology into something that is not what it is, and some poor folks have unfortunately believed it. We're looking forward to the opinion of the federal judge in this case, because I think it'll really throw the strategy of the Koch brothers, who are funding this effort here in Kentucky, throw them back and deny them this illegal action.
Londrigan says labor in Kentucky didn't just fight these county-by-county anti-union attacks in court. They also waged a successful campaign to inform and persuade county leaders about what this anti-union attack really is.
When we went and spoke to people, whether they were Democrats or Republicans, at the county level, when we had the chance to really explain this to them, the vast majority of them decided that this was not a good policy for their county and was not what it was portrayed to be. In several cases, the county judge and the magistrates were all Republicans. In Grayson County, for instance, they didn't even second the motion to hear this silliness.
If UPS pilots strike, the 250,000 Teamsters at UPS will stand with them. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa pledged that if a strike is necessary, we will not cross your lines, but will stand with you on them. Independent Pilots Association President Captain Robert Travis says the unflinching support from the Teamsters is exactly what the pilots union at UPS needs to see. All Teamsters and pilots at UPS standing together in support of a new pilot's contract. The Teamsters say UPS has continued to stall and drag its feet in completing an agreement with the pilots union. UPS pilots' strike vote result is being announced Friday. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Back on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show, October 23rd, it's a Friday, the free-for-all on halginsberg.com and also radiomonterey.com, 920 East Coast, 620 Pacific Time. If you want to call and talk about anything at all, please give me a call, 844-4-HAL-G, 844-367-4254. And I want to start with the real change. I was going to say evolution, but it's really more than an evolution. It's a real change, in my view, on the decision back in 2011 to intervene in Libya. I defended that decision up until really yesterday with the argument that Obama was confronted with a very difficult situation where there were credible reports, persuasive reports, that the Libyan tyrant, dictator, Colonel Gaddafi, whatever term you want to use to describe him, he was not obviously a president, was preparing to murder up to a million people in East Libya, which would include Benghazi, which would include, I believe, Tripoli. And the fear of another Rwanda massacre is what animated both Obama and obviously Secretary of State Clinton, whose husband was president when that was a terrible massacre in Rwanda with the Hutus and the Tutsis being slaughtered. So I believe if there's a legitimate use of military force, the best argument, by the way, Tripoli is West Libya, it's Benghazi, that was the center of the unrest against of the rebellions in Libya. So as I said, the Benghazi region was where the slaughter was anticipated if Gaddafi's troops, which were steaming east along the Mediterranean Sea, reached that area. And there had already been reports that some of Gaddafi's troops were killing people. I believed then, and I believed up until yesterday, well, you know, look, if there's ever a time when it's okay for the military, for our military to get involved, it's when we have an identifiable group of people who are going to be killed by a government, by a specific identifiable group, a military under the control of a dictator, a tyrant. He's planning to kill people. And we have very credible reason to believe that this is going to happen and that we can stop it. From what I understand, even progressive groups like Democracy Now, maybe not Democracy Now, but I was reading several progressive websites, which at the time really feared that the Libyan massacre that Obama was warning about was going to happen. I think the big problem, even, I mean, turns out, and by the way, I learned an awful lot of this from Foreign Interests or Foreign Affairs. I found an article from a group, you know, a magazine, Foreign Affairs, which is hardly a left-wing or pro, you know, pacifist, leftist kind of group of people. I mean, it's very much a centrist, it's very much a kind of establishment magazine, Foreign Affairs. And I was reading Obama's Libya debacle by Alan J. Cooperman, How a Well-Meaning Intervention Ended in Failure. Cooperman makes the point, makes a lot of points. First of all, that the warning from Obama, we knew that if we waited one more day, Benghazi, a city nearly the size of Charlotte, could suffer a massacre that would have reverberated across the region and stain the conscience of the world. That's what Obama declared in advance of the no-fly zone and the bombing of Gaddafi's forces. Did Obama believe that at the time? I think he probably did. There were other credible, more progressive institutions, reporters that were saying the same thing. It turns out that reports that Gaddafi had already killed some 10,000 people were greatly exaggerated, perhaps by opposition forces that wanted America to intervene. Whether we knew they were not credible, I don't know. Obama certainly said they were credible. I think the decision to stop the military from occupying Benghazi is justifiable, even now, based on what was known then. But what I believe was utterly unjustifiable was continuing air strikes that totally destroyed Gaddafi's forces, left him dead when rebel forces were able to act against him with impunity. Rebel forces with sustained Western air support conquered the country in response. We should not have weighed in so heavily that Gaddafi was overthrown. That was the terrible mistake. Yes, stop Gaddafi from occupying Benghazi, a city, an area, region, East Libya, that had rebelled and that had achieved a measure of freedom from Gaddafi. Stop the forces, at least in the moment, because the fear of a bloodbath was real. I cannot fault Obama and Clinton for making that decision. And ultimately, it was Obama's decision. Where I can fault them is that for 7 months after the no-fly zone was imposed, we provided support to the rebel forces leading to the ouster of and the killing of Gaddafi. What happened in that aftermath was identical, perhaps even worse, well, the same as what happened in Iraq. We destroyed the infrastructure. The institutions were gone. There were no civil service. There was no government. There were no administrators on the ground to maintain services, to maintain electricity, to maintain the roads, to maintain a semblance of order. Admittedly, Gaddafi, like Saddam Hussein, had done this in a brutal fashion. Admittedly, they had done it anti-democratically, but they were doing it. And the Foreign Affairs article by Kuberman makes the point that Libya, at that time, was probably the most advanced country in the Arab world, at least in terms of women's rights, at least in terms of the ability to lead a secular life. Gaddafi, like Hussein, Saddam Hussein, was a secularist. He was not a religious nut. He was not an Islamist. And when he was felled, the Islamists had a tremendous advantage. Organized support from around the Arab world, arms probably coming from Saudi Arabia. Certainly Al-Qaeda was part of the infiltration of the rebels, just as it was, or ISIS was, and is, in Syria. That's why all this talk is such nonsense about trying to take down Assad. If the Russians want to do it, fine, put it on them. But you destroy a central government and you leave nothing behind, a vacuum, what's going to happen? What we saw happen in Iraq, unrest, instability, 1 million people having to move, dislocated, and the exact same dynamic played out in Libya. So my new thought, my new view on Libya is, okay, stop Gaddafi from taking Benghazi, at least until we have done an investigation to find out if there were massacres, if there was killing, if there was reprisals taken against rebels, unjust reprisals taken against rebels. Turns out, according to Human Rights Watch, only 233 people were killed by the supporters of Gaddafi, by his troops, not 10,000. If all that were to be uncovered while Gaddafi was still in charge, again, don't keep bombing him. Don't keep supporting from the air the rebels. Instead, let's do a little bit of investigating. Let's send in the UN and find out what really happened. That's what should have been done. Phone number 844-4HELGY, 844-367-4254. And because that wasn't done, and because of the rush to depose, unseat, destroy Gaddafi, Libya has become what it is now, a vacuum. It's imploded. It's a center now of Islamist extremism, violence, terrorism. It's a disaster. One big mistake I made when I was more prepared to excuse what this administration did there was to believe them. Just as I kind of sort of had a little bit of a desire to believe Bush when he was talking about all the weapons of mass destruction. And I never believed Iraq was part of 9/11. I never bought that. But the WMDs and the poison gas and the nuclear weapons program, I don't know, maybe it's true. I don't know. I did not support the invasion of Iraq. I thought it was wrong at the time. I was very, very troubled by it. But I, when asked, what would I have done if I were in Hillary Clinton's place? I don't know. Maybe I would have voted to authorize the use of force. It would have been the wrong vote. I don't excuse her for making a mistake that I might have made. I certainly don't excuse her for backing, for refusing to admit her error for many years when it was so clear in the immediate aftermath of the attack on Iraq, the invasion of Iraq, the toppling of Iraq, that it was wrong. But in the moment, I cannot, I do condemn her because lawmakers are expected to do, to be better. And she wasn't better. 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254. So she got it wrong in Iraq, and in Libya, she got it wrong too. And she says now she was pushing Obama for more military presence in Libya rather than less. And obviously the right answer was only this, just enough force used to stop Gaddafi from taking Benghazi, investigate, and then make a decision. That's what we should have done. What we did was wrong. What we did was the worst of all possible worlds. Better to have let Gaddafi take Benghazi. Apparently there wouldn't have been any slaughter anyway. Wouldn't have been great. There would have been reprisals for sure, but nothing nearly as bad as what was touted as coming in the Western media, and what and certainly nowhere nearly as bad as what's happened in Libya. Apparently, we have 400,000 people now dislocated in the killings and the unrest. And this is a country with about 6 million people. So 400,000 in a country of 6 million. I mean, do the math. We have 50 times as many people in this country, 60 times as many people. So if you want to multiply 400,000 times 60, I guess you come out 24 million Americans. So about the, it's comparable. The number relative to the size of Libya, the number of people who've been killed or dislocated, who are homeless, who are refugees, would be about comparable to 24 million Americans. 844-4-HELL-G was a disaster. It was a terrible, terrible mistake. It was wrong. And it's one more example of the lie of the neocons, that we should be using our military force around the world. We should be imposing our will, that we are exceptional. It's one more example of their lies, 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254. I'll tell you what, let's go do our quick, we got to give you the market. I'll give it to you now. I don't even have my music bed up. Dow up yesterday, up today. Dow up 127 points to 70,616. NASDAQ up 90 to 5010. S&P 500 up 19 to 2072. Gold's up $2 an ounce to 1168. Oil, however, down 91 cents a barrel. Quick break, and we'll come back much more in the morning. I hope to hear from you. It's a free-for-all. 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Eric Wustewald. Prior to former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's testimony before the House Select Committee on Benghazi, Fox and Friends co-host Brian Kilmeade took a previous comment from Clinton out of context. Here's Kilmeade.
In just over an hour from now, Hillary Clinton will testify in front of the Benghazi Select Committee. Remember the last time she was questioned, this time in front of the Senate, and that was on Capitol Hill.
Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make?
She didn't think it mattered, the motivation of the killers.
While Brian Kilmeade used the comment to falsely claim that Clinton's statement was made in reference to the Benghazi attackers' motives, the truth is her comment was in reference to the administration's post-attack talking points, and was actually questioning the relevance of asking who edited a government memo. For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
It's a blood, 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 it's a blood,
All right, it is Friday, not Friday night yet, but Friday. I don't think I'm going to have as exciting a Friday night as Katy Perry, however. 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254. I'd love to hear from you, 844-4-HELL-G. On this free-for-all, if you want to talk about the Benghazi hearings yesterday, the House, if you want to talk about the debate aftermath, if you want to talk about, hey, I wrote about raising taxes, why we need to, on the richest people, why we need a much higher top marginal tax rate. And that's all at my website. I certainly hope you check it out, HalGinsberg.com. And I have it all there. And the beauty of high top, what is it, top, of high marginal tax rates on the 1%. So I strongly urge you to check that out. I think it's quite good. I like your feedback as well. And I got a lot of feedback from Jeff. What I find so frustrating with Jeff is he is so focused on me. He wants to make it about me. You know, you this, you want to raise taxes, and you this, and you know, but you're not prepared to pay for it, or you're, you know, the people, you are the person that you complain about. And it's just, it's not evidence-based arguing. I mean, you think this guy, he's a scientist, you think he would say, well, you say hell. I mean, it seems to me, if you think raising taxes, I mean, I believe we should raise taxes on the rich. I think people who make over $1 million a year on that, on the margin, in other words, for every dollar you make over $1 million, the government should probably tax it about 80, 85 cents for every dollar once you get over $1 million. I would go to 50% at $500,000, and maybe you'd put another tier in there between $500,000 and $1 million. I don't have every single number, but at $500,000, look, only one out of every 200 tax returns in America show a total income of over $500,000. One out of every 200. That's how rare. That's how, you know, few people make that kind of money. That's how few families or returns show $500,000. One out of every 200. 0.5%. It's a tiny number. It's infinitesimal. One out of every 200. Is it too much to demand that once you start earning over $500,000, once you start getting more than $500,000 in your paycheck, you start paying 50 cents on every dollar above that? I don't think so. But I don't think that's unfair. Do you think? I don't think that's unjust. Some people say, well, it's their money. They earned it. Well, they earned it. They earned it in a society where we have an infrastructure, where we have police, where we have building codes so that people are safe. We have firefighters. We have education. So if you employ people, they have an education. So those are all very good reasons why, if you are one of the winners, if you're in the top 0.5% in terms of income, you can easily and should pay a lot more than you do now. That's one reason. And another reason is, and this is something that really the righties hate. I mean, it's in the service of a society that works for all, that's ultimately fair. The claim that a salary of, say, $750,000 or $1 million or $2 million shows that that's your worth, that's your value, that's only true to the extent that you base value on what the market will pay, what the market, how the market allocates the resources. And I think that's a factor to take into account, but I don't think it's the only factor by any means. I don't think that because the market tells me that if I could throw a 99-mile-per-hour fastball, I should be getting $20 million. I don't think that makes me 2,000 times better. Did I do the math right? What, 20 million? Let's see, you're at 100,000, 10. Yeah, I don't think that means I'm 200 times better than a cop who's worked 30 years, made it up to captain or detective or lieutenant, and is finally making 100,000. I don't think I'm 200 times better than he is just because I can throw a fastball 99 miles an hour. I don't think I'm 200 times more valuable to society than a teacher who's a 30-year vet and has done a tremendous job educating generations of children. I guess I just don't see it that way. Sure, the market says, well, you can throw a 99-mile-per-hour fastball, you bring people into the stadium and your team is winning games, fine. That's fine. The market is giving a pretty interesting approximation of what my economic value is to my employer, but I don't think that should be the final word. And one way we can make sure it's not the final word is say, hey, once you get into that rarefied air, once you get to the far right end of the bell curve, you're just going to have to pay a heck of a lot more in taxes when you get above a certain level. And that's so that we have a fair society, a just society, a society that's sustainable, a society that works. You still get to live better than most everybody else. You'll still eat better. You'll still travel in first class. You'll still leave a heck of a lot more to your children than most people ever get an opportunity to do. But you won't be that much better off than everybody else. And if you don't agree with my arguments, present the counterarguments. Tell me why I'm wrong. Tell me why the market is a perfect determiner of one's value. Explain to me why societies that don't tax the rich at higher levels do better. I would say with examples. There's lots of countries out there. There's lots of countries throughout history, thousands of them, thousands of societies. Maybe you can point to some that have done very well letting the wealthy continue to aggregate more and more and more and take more and more and more. Maybe you can show me some of those that have worked really well. Maybe you think that pre-Civil War Virginia was an ideal place to live, or Alabama, because there was no federal taxes there. There was hardly even a state tax. There was hardly even any real infrastructure. Maybe you think that's a great society, one we should emulate. Or how about France in the 13th century, 14th century? There was no central government. Maybe you think that's the ideal we should be aspiring to. Fine, make the argument. But when you try to make it about me personally, I mean, it's just nonsense. It's silly. What it shows is you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Let's go to Julius in Los Angeles. Hey, Julius.
Hillary, what did you know about Juliusnomics, and when did you know it? Don't turn to your watered plant, Hal Ginsberg. He's going to jail with you. You know, Hillary really cares for the embassy personnel, the Foreign Service personnel, just like she cared about the thousands of American heroes she murdered in Iraq. I can't believe you were stupid enough to believe that baloney about weapons of mass destruction. Man, you're an idiot if you believe that.
I was suckered. I was suckered. You happy?
Man, you're an idiot.
I didn't fully believe it, but I didn't fully reject it either.
If you didn't know absolutely it was BS, you're an idiot. With friends like Hillary, you are
What
dead.
Did you think about Libya? Do you think that was as big a mistake as Julius does? Douglas does?
And Hillary and you murdered Ambassador Stevens. I did. There's no question about it.
And how so? What was the crime? What was the crime that Obama and...
The crime
and
was capitalism. The crime was keeping Julius
little more specific?
Yeah, they kept talking about money, money, money. We didn't have money for this.
Well, that was Congress. That was Congress that cut the funding.
No, but Hillary said the State Department doesn't have money to do its job. It doesn't have the money to check all the emails. That's everywhere. A guy at the Social Security.
Well, don't you think, Julius, the bigger problem?
They don't have the money to do the same.
Julius.
Thing. One woman, I heard a woman on TV say that Obama's taken more vacations than all the other presidents put together.
Completely false.
But that scumbag is cutting.
But that's not true. That's not true. He takes far fewer vacations, for example, than W did.
Oh, well, yeah, she was on Fox, so I figured she might be lying.
Yeah, I can't believe you. Wait a sec. You get after me for believing, kind of, sort of believing some nonsense, but you believe what you heard on Fox?
It was so obvious. I didn't have any other facts, but you had plenty of facts. It was obvious there were no weapons of mass destruction. It was absolutely...
Well, it became more... I thought we should give the weapons inspectors time. And they were saying... Scott Ritter was saying... Hans Blix was saying that there aren't... No, I'm just telling you, I wasn't... Julius, I wasn't 100% certain that it was a lie from the beginning. That's all I'm saying. Julius, don't...
Anybody who's ever done any work for the CIA... knows how Powell made a fool out of himself. They don't give a damn about assets. They sacrifice assets like they're cockroaches.
Hey,
man.
Julius.
They don't give a damn.
Do you not think that the bigger problem when it comes to Benghazi... Oh, there's the music. Let me take that down. Do you think the bigger... We'll take a break in a moment. Do you think the bigger problem is that we just shouldn't have... maybe it's okay to stop the massacre we thought was going to happen, but we should never have... we never should have deposed Gaddafi in the first place. Don't you think that's the bigger problem?
I think the video did have something to do with the attack on the embassy in Benghazi.
That crazy preacher down in Florida? What did he do?
Yeah, it's obvious it has something to do with it. And, you know, there was no excuse. They had plenty of time to get troops there. But they played it cheap. You know, she said we went for the lowest bid, the lowest contractor for security.
Now you're mouthing nonsense from the Republicans. I'll let you go.
That's what she said.
Hey, have a good weekend, Julius. Thanks for the call. I'm not going to go back. I don't know what she said. I'm sure that she didn't say it like that. I'm sure that's nonsense. I had another point here. This was about, Libya? Well, what I said, again, I think we should have perhaps stopped the massacre that we thought was going to happen. We certainly shouldn't have deposed Gaddafi. Oh, this is the other point. Gaddafi's a bad guy. Gaddafi's a killer. Gaddafi was probably involved in Lockerbie. Remember back in the 80s when that plane was shot down over Scotland? Terrible. So there's a lot of things you can leave at Gaddafi's door. But what is the point that Kupperman also makes at Foreign Affairs is we didn't need to depose him because he was on his way out anyway. He was 69 in ill health, and his son, Saif, who was, you know, as far as we know, he was going to take, you know, over, was actually a true reformer. As best as we could tell, and of course, always intelligence is subject to, to mistakes, and they get things wrong and all that, but Saif, at least according to Alan Kupperman, I don't know any of this. I'm just repeating, I'm reporting to you what I'm reading and what I read. He was really a reformer. He wanted some type of representational government, and he was not going to take power, he said, unless or until it was clear that the people wanted him to be the leader of the country. And according, again, to Kupperman, let me just read this to you. Despite the massive turmoil caused by the intervention, remember what I told you, 400,000 or more people dislocated and many killed, right, in the years since we deposed Gaddafi, and now the entire region a hotbed of terrorism, a training ground for Al-Qaeda and ISIL. Despite the massive turmoil caused by the intervention, some of its unrepentant supporters claim that the alternative, leaving Gaddafi in power, would have been even worse. But Gaddafi was not Libya's future in any case. 69 years old and in ill health, he was laying the groundwork for transition to his son Saif, who for many years had been preparing a reform agenda. I will not accept any position unless there is a new constitution, new laws, and transparent elections, Saif declared in 2010. Everyone should have access to public office. We should not have a monopoly on power. And Kupperman goes on to write, Saif also convinced his father the regime should admit culpability for a notorious 1996 prison massacre and pay compensation to the families of hundreds of victims. In addition, in 2008, Saif published testimony from former prisoners alleging torture by revolutionary committees, the regime's zealous but unofficial watchdogs, whom he demanded be disarmed. So you're seeing reform already transpiring in Libya as a direct result of, I guess, the father's son, the father's hand-picked successor, his son, to be the next leader. From 2009 to 2010, Saif persuaded his father to release nearly all of Libya's political prisoners, creating a de-radicalization program for Islamists that Western experts cite as a model. He also advocated abolishing Libya's information ministry in favor of private media. So this guy was clearly on the track, was actually already moving Libya in a much better direction. And Kupperman says, you know, we don't know. It might not have worked out as well as he's describing. There might have been bumps, stumbles along the way. He might have ultimately been prevented from transforming Libya into a truly representative country with a truly representative government. But it appeared to be on the right track. And we know, based on recent history, that when you destroy a government, the result is so often chaos, a political vacuum, anarchy, and, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people killed and or dislocated. So you read all this, and it's really impossible to think it was the right move, or even could have been thought to be the right move to topple Gaddafi in 2011. And that, you know, that led directly, of course, to what happened in Benghazi the following year. It was a terrible mistake. And that's what if the Republicans really cared, if they really cared about our country, if they really cared about better foreign policy, if they really cared about people who serve overseas, then that's what they would be focusing on. That's what they would have focused on in their hearings rather than, you know, just sort of nonsensical stuff about, you know, did you get the planes in the air in time? What were you talking about when you were preparing? Whoever went on those Sunday morning talk shows. I mean, that's just nonsense. What about this email to Sidney Blumenthal? Why'd you put the comma here instead of there? I mean, that's the kind of weeds these clowns are crawling around in. All right, 844-4-HELGY, 844-367-4254. Interesting column by Paul Krugman. He gets a lot of it right, not 100%, in his analysis of the Canadian election, the votes there for the Liberal Party. We'll talk about that. Also, don't forget, it's a Friday. We have Arlen for the final hour, 8 to 9 Pacific, 9 to noon East Coast. Love to talk to you. Sorry, 9 to noon. 8 to 9 Pacific, 11 to noon East Coast time. Give me a call, 844-4-HELGY, 844-367-4254.
This is Scientific American's 60-Second Science. I'm Erica Barris. Got a minute? You can talk to teens all you want about sex, but if you want to drive home healthy messages about consent, maybe you should have them watch.
In the criminal justice system, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous.
Law and Order, Special Victims Unit. Really. Compared with other TV shows anyway, because a study finds that college students who watched episodes of the various Law and Orders had a better understanding of sexual consent issues than those who watched two other crime procedural franchises, NCIS and CSI. The research is in the Journal of Health Communication. For the study, researchers asked more than 300 college freshmen if they agreed or disagreed that if a woman is raped, she is at least somewhat responsible, a concept called rape myth acceptance. The students were also asked about their intentions to seek consent for sexual activity and their intentions to refuse sexual activity. The results. The college students who watched ripped from the headline Law and Order versus the other shows had stronger views about consent and were less likely to accept rape mythology. Watching CSI, where the victim is often dead and treated as another piece of evidence, was associated with lowered intentions to seek consent and a greater acceptance of rape myths. Exposure to the NCIS franchise was associated with decreased intentions to refuse unwanted sexual activity. Previous research found that the Law and Order shows directly challenge myths and stereotypes related to sexual assaults, while CSI has been criticized for plot lines that reinforce rape myths. So it turns out watching those shows, at least for college-age kids, may have some effect on sexual consent, intentions, and behavior. And when it comes to Law and Order, that effect could be positive. Thanks for the minute. For Scientific American's 60 Second Science, I'm Erica Barrett.
Oh, come all you young fellers, so young and so fine, and seek not your fortune in the dark, dreary mind.
All right, back on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show. I thought that was an interesting 60-second science. They conclude there, or they suggest strongly, that watching Law & Order SVU is going to make you more informed about the need to get consent from a partner and to reject the notion that when a woman is raped or when an individual is raped, it's often their fault. And the point is reinforced by these surveys that show that people who routinely watch CSI or NCIS show less sensitivity to victims of sexual assault. But the problem with that is correlation is not causation. It might well be that people who are just naturally more sensitive and more empathic are going to watch the former show, which is, of course, the Special Victims Unit. And that's true for me. For example, I don't watch NCIS. I don't watch CSI. I do watch Special Victims Unit Law and Order. So, you know, I'm somebody who's very, you know, sensitive to victims. So maybe I've chosen that show. It's not that it made me more sensitive. That's why I watch it. My son watches all of them, so I'm going to have to ask him what he thinks. Let's go to Douglas in Oakland. Hey, Douglas, good morning.
Hey.
Oh, man, your phone.
Good morning.
Yeah, that's better. That's better. Good morning. Go ahead.
Nothing to these people on a 1% level. We mean nothing. You, your kids, my family means absolutely nothing. And so for you to take this, you know, Iraq and then Libya and say, oh, see how the cons are? The Democrats are part of it. And that's why when you read that Craig Roberts article, the guy talked about all the presidents, whether you're Clinton, you know, a Bubba from the South, or whether you're a sissy Obama, we're being played like a marionette doll, man. And it's silly. It's silly to say that, yes, that was justified, it is not justified. The whole goal is to destroy the Middle East for ever becoming progressive in any way. And like you said, you'd have to be a fool afterwards to realize that we're bombing and we're going after the infrastructure of all of these countries that don't cooperate with the United States. Because at the same time, there's three other Arab countries that started some kind of uprising, and they were crushed. Bahrain, crushed. Crushed. And you want to know why? Because we have a fleet of Navy ships in that country. Countries that don't cooperate with Israel and the United States. PNAC, if you read it and read it extensively, their whole goal is to never allow a developed Arab world, ever, ever. And so that Israel can be what they would like to consider the formal, structuralized, and the most successful country in the Middle East. They will never, ever allow a successful country in the Middle East that isn't under the thumb of the United States and Israel. That's PNAC. That's the reality.
You know what's interesting about that? I'm not going to argue
that.
I want to just make a point.
That article, that Paul Craig wrote the article, and he knocks the you know, and gives them all their little monikers, whether there's he and all the, you know, Obama being the sissy president. You'll see that, man, that's writing. That's got teeth to it. I read your articles, and yeah, they're intelligent if you're talking to an intelligent crowd, and everybody wants to, you know, but you have no bite in it. You don't call names. You don't call people out. You know, and then you take a look at what happened in Libya and Iraq and go, that's the con. You know, I mean, Obama didn't go down and invite all the people from the 99% to the White House for a beer summit. He didn't do any of that. You know, come on.
No, I think one thing that's really interesting about what you're saying here is people who say, and I'm getting to this because I'm on, you know, I post a lot at this site, I told you, Dagblog, and it's very democratic. I mean, everyone's a Democrat, but there's a huge schism between the pro-Hillary and the pro-Bernie forces there. And one of the points that some of the pro-Hillary people make is that they like Hillary because she stands up to Republicans, and they cite her performance yesterday. I just so don't see that. What you're saying is, and I think there's a lot of truth to it, Republican or Democrat in the White House, our foreign policy is the same. We use our troops, we use our people as cannon fodder to protect and to empower and make even richer these multinational corporations. And that's not standing up to Republicans. That's giving them exactly what they want.
Pal, I gotta take off.
You take care, buddy. Have a good weekend.
All right
take. And I'm not looking to just get along with or agree with Douglas. I'm sure we'll have disagreements, and I'm sure he would say I'm wrong even to believe bombing Gaddafi when he was going towards Benghazi was justifiable. I'm making the point now that the regime change was a terrible, terrible mistake. And I find very persuasive Douglas's argument that the decision to make change in Iraq, in Libya was driven solely by political considerations, not by the people, not by a hope to make a freer nation for the Libyans, which turned out not to work out, but simply because Gaddafi was not in any way a friend of the West. He had generally tied his future to Russia. All right, 844-4-HELGY, 844-367-4254. Quick, well, it won't be quick. I take it back. It will not be a quick break. We will come back after this latest, you may not have heard it, this latest Green News Report. Those guys do a great job. Always promote Brad and Desi for the good work. That's coming up on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show. One more hour, and then we finish off the week with Arlen. He has some great topics. We'll talk about Benghazi with him, and he has some other a really interesting article he came up with I want to discuss. So I'll come up.
It's Thursday, October 22nd, 2015.
No corporation has ever done anything this big and this bad.
Calls grow in Congress for DOJ to investigate Exxon.
Harper really bet the farm on oil and gas, and he lost that bet.
Political change in Canada. Is it the beginning of the end for the dirty tar sands? 3 out of 4 Americans now accept climate science. Your sunscreen may be killing coral reefs. Plus, surprise, September 2015 was the hottest September ever recorded.
All of those surprises and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
There is no constitutional right to commit fraud.
Oh, great, Senator Whitehouse. Now you tell Exxon. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, slowly but surely, pressure continues to build to bring a prosecution against Exxon akin to what was brought against Big Tobacco.
I know, it's remarkable, but we'll get to that in a moment. First, the ouster of Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper of Canada this week, after nearly 10 years in power, in favor of Liberal Party leader Justin Trudeau, may foretell a major change in Canada's energy future and Harper's agenda to exploit Alberta's dirty tar sands at all costs. As Alex Dukas of climate policy group Oil Price International and an actual Canadian explained on the broadcast this week, Harper bet big on fossil fuels and lost.
Harper really bet the farm on oil and gas, and he lost that bet. And unfortunately, that bad bet is now hurting a lot of Canadians. So you know, hopefully with a new government in power, we'll start to see that turn around a little bit. We'll start to see recognition of the value of economic diversification and a recognition that, you know, oil and gas is not the future for Canada, but that clean energy is really a huge opportunity for Canadians.
We'll see. I'm still not certain about this Liberal Party in Canada and if they really get it yet.
Although Trudeau has said that he will personally attend the United Nations climate treaty talks in December, and even though he's expressed support for the controversial Keystone XL tar sands pipeline across the U.S., he said he wouldn't do it at the expense of diplomatic relations with the U.S. Here in the U.S., pressure is rising on Exxon. 2016 Democratic presidential candidate Senator Bernie Sanders has joined calls from other congressional Democrats urging the U.S. Justice Department to investigate ExxonMobil. That's in the wake of new reports showing the oil giant concealed its knowledge that its fossil fuels cause global warming and spent millions of dollars on disinformation to deceive the public, much in the same way that the tobacco industry was successfully prosecuted a decade ago for doing the same. Rhode Island Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, himself a former prosecutor, made the case for an investigation on the Senate floor this week.
The parallels between what the tobacco industry did and what the fossil fuel industry is doing now are so striking that civil discovery could reveal whether the fossil fuel industry's activities crossed that same line into racketeering. And again, fraud is not protected by the First Amendment. There is no constitutional right to commit fraud.
Meanwhile, another new poll indicates the denial industry's influence is waning. 76% of Americans now agree climate change is occurring, and that includes a majority of Republicans. The new UT Energy poll shows yet again that U.S. acceptance of climate change science has shifted significantly upwards. Despite the efforts of the denial industry, it increased 10 points just in the last year. Your sunscreen appears to be damaging coral reefs. That's the conclusion of a disturbing new study that finds that even a minuscule amount of oxybenzone, the main ingredient in most sunscreens, appears to damage coral reefs. It's just one of many pollutants damaging corals, but scientists say you can help by wearing protective clothing instead of chemical sunscreens when you're swimming near coral reefs.
Are there sunscreens that don't have oxybenzone in them?
Yes, there are, but only a few.
Will there be a move to remove oxybenzones from sunscreen?
It's possible, but this study is very new, so I'm sure it will take a lot of time to get to that place. Finally, it's official. September 2015 was the hottest September ever recorded for the entire planet since 1880.
Oh, boy.
That's according to NOAA. It ranked second in NASA's data set. It marks the fifth month in a row of record-setting monthly heat temperatures. The newest hottest September was fueled by record-warm ocean temperatures, and that has broken the record for the highest number of Category 4 and 5 storms in a single year. The Northern Hemisphere, where most of us live, has now had 20 cyclones, that's both hurricanes and typhoons, reaching Category 4 intensity or higher, and the season is not over yet.
And when you say it is the warmest ever recorded since 1880, it wasn't this warm in 1880. That's just when they started keeping records of this stuff.
That's right.
So as far as we know, it has never been this warm, at least not while humans were walking this earth.
That's right.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime from Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, it's too hot, too hot, too hot, lady. Gotta cool the finger. What a mess. Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
Right back on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show, and the weather really, I mean, the climate, we've obviously changed. We know that for beyond any doubt, beyond any legitimate argument. We are changing our planet's climate. We've already done so, and we continue to make it worse and worse. Weather, too. And one of the excuses that righty makes when we have these devastating hurricanes as well, it's not that the hurricanes are more powerful, which is what climatologists are saying. We have more powerful hurricanes because the ocean waters are hotter. The warmer the water, the more the evaporation occurs, the faster the evaporation. When the winds go over the ocean, they pick up more strength and speed from the hot ocean water, and they also absorb more water as well. So you get wetter hurricanes and you get more powerful ones. One of the arguments that Wright has made, and it seems to have a certain degree of logic as well, it's not that we have more powerful hurricanes, it's just that we have more people living by the shores, and we have more valuable real estate. Used to be that people sometimes lived on rivers and they lived on the ocean. They weren't necessarily wealthy at all. In fact, you would have rough neighborhoods sometimes. But now we've got all these multi-million-dollar homes that are built right there, right on docks, so that people have their own private slips. So the real estate is more valuable and there are more people. So that's the argument. It's not that the storms are more powerful. Well, it's just false. I mean, it's true. That is true. But it's also true that the storms simply are more powerful than they've been. And this is from today's Washington Post. The Capitol Weather Gang. Potentially catastrophic Patricia becomes strongest hurricane ever recorded to slam Mexico today. So this isn't the most powerful hurricane to slam Mexico. This is the most powerful, the strongest hurricane, the most powerful winds ever. This is the biggest strongest, meanest sucker that we've ever seen. Early today, the behemoth, I think I say either way. I love that word, behemoth. The behemoth Hurricane Patricia became the strongest hurricane ever measured by the National Hurricane Center. Patricia is forecast to make landfall in Mexico's west central coast late today, with destructive winds, torrents of rain, and a devastating storm surge. The Cat 5 storm's maximum sustained wind strengthened to an astonishing 200 miles per hour. This makes Patricia the strongest hurricane on record in the National Hurricane Center's area of responsibility, which includes the Atlantic and the eastern North Pacific basins. And it's not done growing. According to the NHC, the storm may even strengthen a little more. It could go up to 205 miles per hour, which would be significantly stronger than even the super typhoon Haiyan, which struck the Philippines with peak winds of 195 miles per hour. I believe Haiyan is recent too. So it's the most powerful storms are very recent. Haiyan hit the Philippines back in 2013, all the way 2 years ago. So there's no question. The most powerful typhoon ever, Haiyan, was 2 years ago. We now have the most powerful hurricane ever, which is apparently going to be even more powerful than that typhoon. Do you really doubt that this is because of humans? I mean, why? What's your reasoning? Are you a scientist? Scientists say, hey, stronger winds, more water in storms, more destruction, global warming. What would be your argument that this isn't global warming? You want to look at the 500-year to 1,000-year drought in California, the once-in-a-millennium drought? Do you think maybe does that do it for you? How about and I saw this story about the drought in Ethiopia. So there's a terrible drought in Ethiopia. I didn't know it ever ended because there was a drought in Ethiopia throughout the 90s. And it was just murderous. You know, millions of people dying, right? Well, I guess it ended because it's back again. Ethiopia remains caught in a deadly cycle of drought and famine.